Welcome to a special edition of The Picture Show, the special episode midway through our Halloween, our month of Halloween movies. We thought we'd do a little something extra. I'm Phil Rude, I'm the dad.
I'm Austin Rude, I'm the son.
And what are we talking about this week, Oz?
Something you brought to the table, actually. The Amazing Screw-On Head.
The Amazing Screw-On Head. We are talking about both the short comic by Mike Mignola. If you don't know him, I'm sure you are aware of BPRD and Hellboy. He is the creator of both of those. And The Amazing Screw-On Head was a short comic in a collection of short stories. I have it right here. The Amazing Screw-On Head and Other Curious Objects by Mike Mignola. And they made a television pilot out of The Amazing Screw-On Head. The show never got picked up, but
it's a tragedy.
It really kind of is. I think there's like this kind of cult status around this property where there are people who are fans of it.
Well, interesting enough.
Yes.
Okay, so I grew up with a dad who is a fan of this. And so you would watch it occasionally, and I thought it was like a mainstream thing. Like, I thought this was like up there in fandoms with like,
like on par with Hellboy or
right,
something like
yeah.
that. Right.
I thought people knew about this, and then one day I remember like, I don't remember, I made a reference to it, and then my friend was like, "What?" And I like looked it up to kind of explain what I was talking
thing.
About. I was like, "No, you know, your dad's probably shown
the
you a bunch
head.
Of times."
Yeah.
And they just thought I was crazy.
Not crazy. It's just I believe, Sci-Fi Channel. So it was, the pilot was being made by a basic cable channel with a fairly niche viewership. You know what I mean? This wasn't like Adult Swim that is a little bit wider, or
right.
AMC, or a big network show. This was a small cable network trying to launch an animated show on a comic book property.
Right.
From the early 2000s. Yes, I found this almost by accident back in the Netflix DVD days.
Oh, wow.
And Netflix still does this, I found out. Like, they still mail out DVDs to you. You can sign up for that plan.
That sounds fake.
No, it's real. It's totally real. It's what Netflix started as.
I know that's what it started as, but I thought they stopped that.
Okay. Here's the thing. I thought it was weird that it kept going, too. And somebody was talking about it on Twitter one day. This is a rabbit hole. We're going off track already.
It's a mini episode.
It's
we don't have to.
Like, we stay on track on our regular episodes.
Shh.
Somebody was talking about this on Twitter one day, and they were talking about, I can't believe I didn't think of this because I come from a rural area. But, like, there are places in the United States that don't have, like, the greatest internet for streaming an entire movie. You know what I mean? Like,
that's true.
The idea that you might live in a rural or a underserved community where high-speed internet is either not available, just infrastructure-wise, or it's unaffordable to you, then you still have access to movies with this very affordable DVD plan where you can get
right.
a DVD sent to you. Anyway,
I'm curious now as to what their like selection is. Like, do they have like new stuff too?
I'm
or
sure
is
they,
it just like this backlog
I'm
of
sure
old...
they do. Yeah, that's a good question because I don't know how much stuff still comes out on DVD or Blu-ray. I'm sure they have a Blu-ray plan too. But I mean
right.
like if you look at like Redbox, that's all Blu-ray and DVD. It's still coming out. It's still available.
Yeah, I think DVDs
rent.
Still exist. It's just not as, like, big of a market.
I don't know. It's hard to say because, back when we were getting DVDs, that was the advantage of that, was that you could get everything. Like,
mm-hmm.
streaming was a very sort of, okay, here's what we got right now. And it was a lot of independent stuff that just needed to get out. It was a lot of older stuff that they could get the rights to. And now so much more stuff is streaming. I think it's all kind of available wherever.
Right.
But I'll bet there's still a good DVD selection. Anyway, back to the main point.
I want to ask you real quick, why did you choose Halloween to talk about this?
I feel like this is, let's jump ahead. I feel like this is in line with Halloween as you define it. This is monsters and fun.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of general silliness. This isn't a thing that takes itself very seriously.
Right.
And I just figure there's werewolves, there's zombies, there's vampires, there's mummies, there's magic, there's demigods, rituals. All of these things I feel like are elemental in a Halloween movie, as opposed to just a straight horror movie. In the same way that I think, like, to keep it in the Mignola-verse, like Hellboy is very much about that. But Hellboy sort of takes it, as fun as it is, it takes it a little more seriously. And this is just a little more fun and loose. And it just seemed to fit the theme of Halloween.
That's interesting that you say that, because I recognize all of those elements that are there. But there's, like, an abstract Halloween thing that just isn't in here. Like, this is gothic.
No jack-o'-lanterns? Maybe. Have to have jack-o'-lanterns and turning leaves?
It has to
leaves?
Be set in fall.
Candy?
No.
Is there candy in this? No, there's a turnip.
Yeah.
It's a dirty it's a old turnip. Piece of crap.
Yeah. It does have that whimsical, yeah, dark
that's,
humor.
That's kind of where I'm at with it. It just seems like a fun piece of kind of scary entertainment.
Right.
And for me, that reads as Halloween.
I could see it as Halloween.
That's all.
Yeah.
And I thought it would just be a fun extra thing we could do for this month, because I always feel like we've talked about it before, the movie aspect of Halloween is like my favorite thing. And I feel like there's never enough time. And it almost seems like Christmas when Halloween is over. And for a minute I go, oh, I can't watch scary movies till next year. And I was like, no, wait, of course I can. You know, like, it's almost like when Christmas is over and you feel that little bit of like, oh, we're so far away from Christmas again.
Right, but it's like a communal thing. Like, everyone's watching horror movies at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
But you said you grew up with this because I got the DVD from Netflix, just when I was, like, browsing around.
Right.
Looking for anything, like, comic related, anything related to Hellboy had, like, some animated specials out, and I think it was right after the first movie. And I think I caught it off, like, a recommendation, like, oh, you like this, you may like this. And I'm like, what the hell is this thing?
Right.
So I ordered it just to check it out. I thought it was amazing. Amazing screw.
Because it is.
Yes. I watched it, I don't know, 10 times in a weekend. And then I took it to a couple guys at work. I'm like, you have to watch this.
Right.
And loaned it to them. And, you know, that was the thing with Netflix. You could just go watch this and drop it in the mail. And it would go back. Yeah.
And now we're taking it to the podcast to share it to even more people.
Well, I bought the DVD. I found it on Amazon. I found the comic on Amazon. Maybe I didn't buy it through Amazon. Maybe I bought it at my local shop. Either way, like, I went all in on this thing. Like, I bought the DVD so I could watch it whenever. And for a while, I watched it all the time. Just as I was working, I would just turn it on.
I remember that.
Yeah. And so I think it's always been, like, a great thing for me to have on in the background. It's funny. Mm-hmm. It's short. It's self-contained. And it's just a little piece of, like, comic genius for me.
Right. Let's talk a little about the story.
Okay. The story and we're talking about the show.
Right.
Which never went past this one episode. I'm talking about the DVD, and people are thinking, like, oh, you bought the box set. It's like, no, it's one episode. This is
a pilot episode.
It is a pilot 22-minute episode.
The rest of the plane doesn't exist.
That's right. It is just the pilot. And it never got picked up, but this pilot is fun.
But this pilot has, like, nuggets of, like, I can see the start of a series arc here.
Sure.
There's, like, the hints to his past with Patience and...
And Emperor Zombie.
Emperor Zombie, right? Like, right?
Emperor Zombie was his manservant before he became a zombie.
Right, and then he's killed all of his
subsequent manservants, right? Until it does flesh out these characters. The comic doesn't have any of that.
Yeah, the comic is very straightforward. It's just like, this is your hero, this is your villain, this is Abe Lincoln, and then
right.
we follow the adventure.
Like, the characters are there. Mr. Groin, the manservant, is there. Mr. Dog is there, but they don't do as much. Then there's other things, like there's a little more, like they don't have the giant bong where he smokes the professor. Emperor Zombie has the professor as one of his colleagues in this.
Right.
The old ladies aren't in the comic.
Yeah, the old ladies come in at the end. They have a thing like, here's three terrible old ladies.
And the monkey. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and I never got that. And then watching the pilot again.
But
I was
they
like,
are.
Okay.
They are in other stories, too. Like the further stories back. Did you read the entire book or did you just read
it? I just read the
okay.
first.
Yeah. Other things, other short stories in here, sort of. Some of them tie in, some of them don't. You have sort of like an origin story of Gung, the demigod. He brings the
right,
demigod.
Yeah.
Like, that's him when he's a little boy in the Valley of Gung.
Oh, that's cool. I kind of thought it was just, like, all separate.
And it is something that he had done, Mike Mignola had done the story of Gung earlier, and he sort of redid it for this collection.
Okay.
We have a story in this book that his 7-year-old daughter wrote, basically, and that he made with her, that kind of fleshed it out. It's called The Magician and the Snake. It's a brilliant, it has nothing to do with Screw on Head or anything.
Right.
It's just this brilliant little beautiful story.
That concept of a kid writing something, that's just bringing to mind Axe Cop.
It was pre-Axe Cop. It's not ridiculous like Axe Cop is. It's just like a little kid's story about two friends and existence and the way the world works. It's actually very insightful for a little kid to come up with.
That seems sweet.
But yeah, a lot of the stuff from the original Screw on Head comic story just isn't there in the way that it's brought in, and I think that is to flesh, like, they read this comic, they said, we have to adapt this into a full episode.
Right.
How do we do that? And I think that's why they added in, like, the backstory about Patience and Emperor Zombie being connected to Screw on Head.
Yeah, I think it adds a lot more sort of motivation to, like, what these characters are doing, and it's...
And it gives, and it helped fill time, I think.
That's true, too.
I think that was a big obstacle, was like, oh, we have to stretch this out, because the book is the first episode.
Right.
Basically, yeah. You know.
It's the same story, but they just fill in these cracks.
They fill in more, and I think they left it open to where they're like, if this gets picked up, now we have places to go.
Right, they've got this big foundation that they've built.
Yeah.
And that's... Really, the scariest thing about this is the fact that there's no more of it. Like, I want to watch a whole season of this. It's not even like Firefly, where there's like a whole season
and
people are like
right.
yearning for more. This is just an episode.
I don't know. I kind of feel like this, it's one of those things where it's kind of just perfect as it is. And I think that's part of the reason I like it. I like short stories. And I like... I honestly like that Firefly is only one season. I feel like if it had gone 7, 8, 9 seasons, or if it was to come back like everybody wants it to, it's just not going to be as good. It's magical that it's this short-lived thing.
Right.
I like that Breaking Bad cut itself off at 5 seasons. They told their full arc in that 5-season thing. I like that. I would have liked to see a full season of Screw on Head. But also, like, Mignola in the book was like, yeah, this is what I have for this.
Right.
He had no desire, really, I think, to do a full comic series on this.
Well, it's kind of like, the examples you gave are like, oh, we're cutting this off before it rots. But this is kind of like, this was cut off before it could even
bloom. Take seed. Right.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Sure. No, I'm just saying, like, there's a, this is a good adaptation of a short comic story.
It is.
And so for a one-to-one comparison, like, I'm holding in my hands everything that is the Amazing Screw-On Head. Right. You know what I mean? Like, it is the DVD, it is the book, and this is the entirety of that universe. And it's just sort of perfect as it exists right now. Yes, I would have loved to to see it. The cast of the show is great. It really is, like, an amazing voice cast. They came together to do this little niche thing.
Who are they? I recognize Emperor Zombie.
Emperor Zombie is David Hyde Pierce from Frasier.
Okay.
Paul Giamatti is the Amazing Screw-On Head. Patton Oswalt plays Mr. Groin and Gung the Magnificent. Corey Brown plays President Abraham Lincoln. And Molly Shannon is Patience.
All right.
Maybe you don't know all those names. I know you know who, like, Patton Oswalt is.
Right. That's pretty much the only...
Yeah, I mean, the guy is in, like, everything now, but it's really cool to see him in this and bringing so much life and comedy to the relationship between Screw-On Head and Mr. Groin. Like...
Oh, it's very funny to watch.
Getting a little too familiar.
It's great.
Whenever he tries to say something, only when spoken to, Mr. Groin. it's so amazing. And I think David Hyde Pierce, who plays he plays Niles Crane on the show Frasier. Have you watched Frasier?
I watched like half the first season.
Okay. The brother is David Hyde Pierce.
Okay.
Kind of the skinny little...
Right, I know.
Who has a crush on the housekeeper.
I barely remember the show, okay. But...
Wow, that's really amazing, because I figured you would really take to Frasier. I think Frasier is one of the better sitcoms of a long time.
I was, like, young.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. I think it maybe just didn't connect with me.
But, and he play... Okay. Off-road one more time. The guy who plays Frasier, I'm blanking on his name now. Kelsey Grammer.
Okay.
Plays Sideshow Bob on The Simpsons.
Really?
You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know. Crazy hair.
Yeah. Sideshow Bob has a brother, and that brother is played by David Hyde Pierce, who played Kelsey Grammer's brother on Frasier. Like,
that's funny. But
yeah, it is. There's like these little...
Leave it up to The Simpsons.
These little in-jokes with that. But yeah. And he's just this very snooty, very proper. And I think he's just perfect to play Emperor Zombie. Like, this very proper sounding diction that he has. But he says the most ridiculous shit throughout the... You know, right. We had a golden retriever... R.I.P. Wrangler. We had a golden retriever when you guys were growing up and when you guys were small. And we would come home and he would run to the door to greet us. And what did we say every day? Almost every day. Mr. Dog, did you come to save the day?
I don't even remember
you
that.
You don't remember that?
No.
Every day we would come home from school and Wrangler would run up to the door and Mr. Dog, you came to save the day. When I was alive and he was alive, he won best in show. Like, it was...
I remember that line, but I don't remember.
I think you remember that line because we said it so many times.
Probably.
That's so funny that you don't... I sound like a giant liar now.
No, I believe you, because that sounds like 100% something you would do, but...
Because Mr. Dog is a character, and Mr. Dog is essentially a dog that has died and been stuffed and still has sentient intelligence, both right. in the comic and they bring him into the TV pilot. And I like, it is those little touches of just super weirdness that I think make this thing so brilliant.
Right. It's like all of these characters work so well together. And I want to see them do more. Like, I want to see what other bodies does Screw-On Head have.
That's, yeah.
And, like, how else can Mr. Dog get into the mix?
Sure.
And what's going to happen with Patience? Like, all of these things, I just want to see more of it.
I get it. I think the show does its job in making you want to see that. Like,
right.
It sort of proves itself in that you want to see that, and you're disappointed that you don't get to. I'm disappointed.
It's what a pilot's
all
about.
I don't want to make it sound like, man, I'm glad they cut this off before it got ruined. Because mm-hmm. I agree. Like, but I think that's testament to how good this pilot is. The DVD comes with special features, which are also worth watching. There's like a storyboard comparison. There's behind the scenes stuff. There's an interview with Mike Mignola on this little short documentary about the making of this.
How involved was he in this? Because like, it's the same art style. They have like some of the same shots, even from like frames from the comics.
For sure. I don't know how involved he was. I don't think he contributed art to the pilot, but they do interview like the background artist and the storyboard guys, and they are talking about like the big challenges trying to draw like him. Like they were really trying to recreate his art and to present it to where it's recognizable as the comic sort of coming over.
Well, they did a good job.
I think they did an excellent job. Mignola has mm-hmm. such a distinct style, the blocking, the spot blacks he has of, you know, shading things.
Yeah, the lighting is intense
it's,
in this.
Yeah, it's all, I mean, that's classic Mignola, though. I mean, it's great. Mm-hmm. But he is interviewed in that documentary, and he's talking about, like, he just sometimes has cool stuff that he wants to draw. And that's essentially what this comic was to him, was just, he's like, everything that's in that comic was just stuff that I thought would be cool and fun to draw. And I wrapped this story around it. And that was essentially it. But Screw-On Head began as a concept for a toy design. Like you would have the head and then you would buy all these other bodies.
Oh, wow.
Which, you know, and in a lot of ways you're like, oh man, if this show had taken hold,
that toy would
have been a real thing.
Disney, look at this. There is so much opportunity.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a Marvel dark horse of conflict of interest there, but I think there was a lot of potential here, all the way across the board. But I still think it would have been kind of niche. I mean, this thing is how many years old now? And, you know, we're talking about it, and probably more than a couple people are like, I've never heard of this thing. I have no idea what
it
is.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
2006. So this thing is 14 years old. That's the show. The comic is probably a couple years past that.
Right.
So
it would be impressive if the comic that it's based off of is younger.
Yeah,
is written after the fact.
Time.
Yeah.
I don't have my glasses on. 02. 02 was the first copyright of this. So, yeah. I wanted to do this episode. The other part of it is to recommend this. I think you're going to have a hard time tracking down the TV pilot. But I really...
I'm sure it's somewhere online, like YouTube maybe.
Maybe it might be on YouTube.
It's not like one of those things like they take down shows on sites because they're like, we don't want you pirating this.
Right.
But like, they're not making money off of this. There's no one, there's no studio.
Yeah,
or...
I really don't know. It's possible it's on a torrent site or something.
I'm
or,
sure it's
or on
floating
YouTube.
Somewhere.
It's possible you can buy the DVD and you could probably find it at a flea market or maybe on eBay. But I would imagine you can track down the comic a lot easier, and I do want to recommend that, because I think this comic, we've been talking a lot about the TV show, I think this comic is great. I think it's a great, it's a beautiful hardcover volume. It's short. I mean, the whole thing is only maybe 100 pages. Probably not even that. But it's just, it's a beautifully put together book. If you like shelf porn, you know, like these really nice, nicely bound, nicely collected short story collections, that's what this is. This is just a beautifully drawn, beautifully put together book of kind of spooky short stories. And
cool ideas.
And cool ideas. And that's some of my favorite Mignola stuff, period. The Hellboy stuff I like the most are... a lot of the short stories, a lot of the single issue stuff. It's the most fun. And right. And I, this is right in line with that. So if you're a fan of Mike Mignola and his work, I can't recommend this enough. I find the DVD if you can. It's great.
Let's get this show back. Let's convince them.
And track down the comic, and I really think if you manage to find either the show or the comic, and you don't like it, I don't know what to tell you. Like, honestly, like,
stay away from us.
Wow.
I mean, come on, what?
Get the hell away from me!
Get back. We need a flaming stick to keep them away.
Oh, man. Well, Austin said it all there. I really think, I cannot imagine how joyless you must be if you cannot have fun with this just silly sort of ghost story comic. It's great. I love it. This has been one of my favorites for, you know, 14 years now. Like,
yeah.
Honestly, it's a really, really good time. And I think something cool to track down for Halloween. Austin, what do you got to finish up? What wrap up your thoughts?
Real quick, a stray thought I had when Please. You were talking about Hellboy is how cool would a movie directed by Guillermo del Toro about the screw on head, the amazing screw on
sure.
head? I feel like, because like his style kind of, what's the artist's name?
Mike Mignola.
Their styles are kind of like similar.
Sure.
Which is why he directed Hellboy.
They complement each other very well.
Right. So I feel like he could do a lot of cool stuff with body designs and sure. kind of monsters.
Sure. I mean, yeah, there's, Del Toro, I think, is very much missed from the BPRD movie universe, as evidenced by that last Hellboy movie, which I don't think is bad. I saw it. I don't remember it. It does. David Harbour's, I think, really good in it, but it just is missing some elements of design and some of these sort of more gothic fun that Del Toro right. brings to something.
I haven't seen it, so I can't fully judge, yeah. but I feel like just from watching the trailers, it looked like a generic superhero movie.
It kind of is, and I think it's kind of a... It's trying to adapt specific comics, and I think it's actually adapting them fairly well, but it's not... yeah, there's something missing. Like, you have to stray from... a book in order to flesh out a movie. They're two different medium kind
right.
of thing. That's all I feel like. I'm not here to trash talk like the new Hellboy movie, but like the fun of Hellboy is that you and the Mignola comics in general, like if there's a character Mike Mignola has created, he's not afraid to just go, yeah, it's part of the universe. And, you know, cross things over. Lobster right. Johnson, Abe Sapien, all the weird fairy tales, Hellboy, all of these things have crossed paths in like the greater BPRD kind of universe. So if you were to tell me, oh yeah, there's this issue of BPRD where the amazing screw on head shows up, I would not be a bit surprised. And I would also say, Tell me which issue that's in.
Show me now.
I am going to track that down. Because I think there is a place for this, maybe not as its own movie or series, but if they were to bring, you know, to keep the current Hellboy movies going or to reboot them again and sort of make like a larger BPRD kind of movie instead of just a Hellboy movie, which I think would be a cool
right.
way to go. I could see them bringing the Amazing Screw-On Head as an element of that.
Don't they kind of do that in the second Hellboy? We're going off on a tangent.
Yeah, again, they do. Yeah.
They have like that underground city or...
There's a lot of... Yes, there's a lot more of the bigger world and the bigger BPRD where the guy Klaus, I think, the guy with the dome on his head, he's like right. a ghost in a suit. They start to bring in more elements of the BPRD. I'm not a huge fan of Hellboy 2. Like, I like it, but I not as much as the first one. But I know what they were going for was trying to make a bigger BPRD movie. And I feel like if Del Toro had done a third one, it would have been a full-on BPRD movie. And that would have been potentially super cool.
That would be cool.
Because there were elements of 2 that were leaning that way. And that those were the best elements of Hellboy 2. Was when they were going, yeah, there was the underground, like the city under the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right.
Where it's like trolls and shit down there, like all that stuff. All the monster designs were great. Like,
it's a cool movie.
And Doug Jones becomes Abe Sapien for that.
Really?
Well, Doug Jones was always the body, but oh, David Hyde Pierce was Abe Sapien in the first Hellboy movie. He was the voice. Okay. He was the voice. That was the Hellboy 2 was where David Hyde Pierce said, Doug Jones, I'm just voice. After Hellboy 1, he was kind of like, your body language is the performance. That is the character. I want, you know, basically handed the voice to him too and said, you do the voice too. This is your character. Not my, it was,
oh, that's cool.
He was very cool about like Doug Jones was that character and David Hyde Pierce was the voice. And on the second one, they just said, no, Doug Jones do the whole thing. Because he really inhabited who Abe Sapien was.
That's cool.
It was, I think it is really cool. But yeah, I'm sure you know that voice, that David Hyde Pierce voice, like pay attention to it in the first Hellboy.
I'll have to go back.
That is him. Yeah. But yeah, I think a screw-on head being incorporated into like a bigger BPRD movie or the comics or whatever, I think would be great.
More Amazing Screw-on Head. That's all we're saying here, please.
I think so. I think it would be cool. We need more monkeys with machine guns.
It's been 14 years, guys. We're deprived.
Werewolf, old lady, cannibals. It's all great. It's all just a really...
Mechanical spider body.
Yes. A kind of Iron Man kind of variety of suits.
That is kind of what it is.
Yeah. It's all just really... A really fun little sandbox that Mignola played in for this. And yeah, I think there's room to move it into a bigger universe. If not, I still have this. I'll always have this. And
no one's taking it away.
No one's taking it away. And I love it so much.
I think that just about sums it up.
Perfect. Oz, thanks for reading and watching with me and agreeing to do this.
Yeah, I had fun.
I'm glad we could knock this out and bring it to the masses. So please check out The Amazing Screw-On Head in any format you can get your hands on. It's short. It doesn't take up too much of your time. And I think you'll like it.
Yeah. I don't know what else to say.
I don't know what else to say either. You want to read the credits?
Yep. We do everything ourselves.
There you have it. Thank you so much for joining us for this special edition of The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. We will see you next time.
See ya.